Everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Nerdiest Podcast in the Midwest, an episode where we're going to be talking about more Marvel and more Star Wars, an episode on the Midwestern Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Stoffel, joined as always by my cohort, my partner in crime,
K.O. Kyle Olson.
We are your Midwestern Nerds. That's M-I-D-W-E-S-T-E-R-N. E-R-D-S. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwestern Nerds. We are the Midwestern Nerds on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to midwesternnerds@gmail.com. You can stream and find and listen to our podcast wherever you stream and find and listen to podcasts. This week, we're talking more Disney Plus content, specifically lots of Marvel, some Star Wars, all that fun stuff. We should have like an asterisk next to Midwesterners podcast and say the Marvel podcast, because 90% of our content is Marvel, but hey, we're living in the golden age, the good times of Marvel. So
we watch what we're given, and especially when what we're given is good.
Yes. So let's just jump right into not Marvel. We're going to start off with Star Wars, with the little show that could. Four episodes in now, Andor. Honestly, I didn't know if we were going to be talking about it this week, but I'm kind of glad that we are. Small things happened in this episode. A lot of build up for this next story arc, but a lot of good things. Kyle, how are your first feelings, responses, reactions to episode four of Andor?
I think if people aren't watching this show, you need to start. Like, we're probably going to dive into some spoilers here for episode four and the rest of episode one through three. If you haven't started watching this show and you're a Star Wars fan, you need to start, because it's going to be great. It already is good. It's going to be great. I can already tell this season and the second. Don't be like me with The Boys and just wait until three seasons are out. Start watching this right now. Watch week to week. The week to week discourse is one of the most fun things that Disney Plus has brought back to my life. Yeah, this episode, I thought this episode was a good, like, change of pace, like, because the first three were very much establishing the show and establishing what's happening. And then this was immediately like, okay, we're diving into things. It was immediately he's being put to the test by Luthen. Cassian is just thrown into this situation with four or five, six other people, I think it was, where no one trusts him. But he is absolutely the man for the job. And it's going to be so interesting to see. Like, I still don't really know what mission they're going on. They're breaking in to try to steal money, basically, so they can't pay their people. That's what's happening. And I think everyone's going to die except for Andor. Like, it just feels like that immediate, like, he's going to be the answer to this. He's going to succeed. The rest of the group, maybe the leader, I can't remember her name now. Vel, I think her name was. She might survive, because I actually believe that she might be related to Luthen, maybe a daughter type of thing. It seemed like there was some sort of relationship there when they were talking. But then with Luthen as well, you get to see his, like, alter ego almost, where the way he hides in plain sight, where he's selling artifacts on, oh, shoot, Coruscant?
Yep.
Ah, look at me with my Star Wars. I'm terrible at Star Wars locations. So look at me with that.
Tatooine.
Yeah, Naboo, right.
And Coruscant are like the three planets that you should know.
Listen, as a general man,
Star Wars fan, and maybe I'll throw in Dagobah too.
I know Tatooine. That's because they spend 90% of the time on Tatooine. Yeah, no. So he's there selling his stuff with his wig, and you see when he puts on this alternate costume, he puts on the rings and he puts on a robe and the wig, and like you see just this slight hand flutter. And, like, you can see he basically turns into another personality, but then immediately drops it because he's still back on his ship. He's just trying to get himself into the mood. Super cool. Like, I just thought this episode was really good about advancing the story, bracing us for what's about to happen. But I still don't even think we're in the meat of what's at. Like I said, I think whatever Andor's doing right now I think is going to be like a maybe one or two episode thing. I don't think this is the big season long expedition. I think this is going to be a really quick thing where he's going to succeed, and then Luthen's going to be like, okay, now here's the big one. That's probably going to lead to the end of the season and into season two.
Yeah, I think this whole season is going to be like Andor's origin story of how he became a rebel and like his starting of the rebel. So we like the first three episodes were basically like, this is where the character is now, and this is how he's gets to be a part of the rebellion. This next arc is going to be like testing the waters, like his first mission. And then after that, I feel like we're going to see a little bit more growth. To me, this episode was definitely the standout episode for Luthen, for Stellan Skarsgård. If you hadn't seen him in like anything else, this is the episode where you're like, oh, damn, I need to go back and not just watch the Thor movies and Marvel and the Pirates of the Caribbean movies where like he's done his franchise stuff, but go back and watch him because this guy is an incredible actor and he definitely shows the chops. You brought up the scene where he's changing into his Empire persona. Just the little attentions to detail without like any dialogue or explaining anything, like just seeing the guy like change and then practicing his face, not just like his hand gesture, but like he does like a slight change in his expression to like kind of jump back into character, because that his persona for the Empire of like almost being like an archaeologist type, like museum curator with all of these ancient artifacts, that's definitely like a persona. Like he's definitely acting there. The character in the show is, and seeing the actor play a character acting, like showing his chops there. His talk with, I forget her name, but the leader, you said it before, but I don't remember.
It's Vel, V-E-L.
So his conversation with Vel about like introducing Andor, like the whole time he's been on the show, so like the last two episodes and then this one, he's had like a calm demeanor to him where like he definitely shows authority, but he's been like not soft-spoken, but like he's just been like well-tempered, I should say. But there was like a second where he's talking to Vel, like trying to express the importance of this, where like he snaps and he gets a little stern, and it's like, oh shit, like this guy might be like the calm, collected type looking type leader, but like don't get on his bad side, because he could get scary real quick.
That's what makes me think that they're related, him and Vel, because I think he realizes, I mean, like this whole time, the whole conversation with Cassian in the first episode, like he stays super calm even though there's fucking police surrounding them and everything. Like, yeah, he has a plan for it and everything, but like for this he has a plan. But I think he realizes the stakes, and I think there must be some sort of relationship with her where he needs to stress how important this is, and he needs to get the message across so that she stays safe.
To me, that scene in that moment told me that, like, you see how determined this character is to, like, get what he wants and do what he wants, but, like, that little snap there also told me, like, he's gonna do what it takes. Like, he's gonna tell you, like, no, like, I'm in charge. This is how we're going to do it. Like, this is how things are going to be. We're going to do things my way. So he was definitely like the big standout to me in this episode. Another standout is all the Empire stuff. I mean, we got a little bit of that with like the, I forget what they're called in the first three episodes, like the security division, that's kind of like the Imperial CIA type organization. Yeah. And now this episode, we get more of like the, some like Imperial officers. It definitely gave me like throwbacks to the original Star Wars movie, A New Hope, where the Empire is like meeting in the Death Star and they're talking about their plans and Darth Vader's there. Like, it definitely got a little bit more sense of that, but it definitely, the show goes so much farther than anything Star Wars has done in the past before. Like, as far as the stuff goes, you get all the politics and you get a lot more of like espionage and just more background into not just the Rebellion, not just Andor, but like the Empire as well, and how where they're at now. And it's going to be fun to see them transition into realizing that this uprising is a bigger threat than they anticipate. So those were the two like big standouts to me in this episode.
The other big thing I think coming out of this is like who I can't figure out. Mon Mothma, right?
Yeah.
Who is she bringing into the fold? Because I think that could be a very important figure in all of this. I don't know if it's going to be someone big. I think it's going to be, I can't remember his name. We just saw him in all the Obi-Wan shows. Leia's dad,
oh yes,
guess, adapted
Organa.
Yes, Organa. Yes. I think it could be him bringing him into the fold. That would make sense. Or it could potentially be a young, like teenage Leia bringing her into the Rebellion pretty early on. Because I believe if the timeline fits, I believe she was starting to do stuff around this age, around this time. So that could be very interesting. I'm very curious to see who Mon Mothma is going to bring in. Mothma, geez.
Yes, I think it's going to be Bail Organa, or I could also see it being Saw Gerrera.
Yes, I've heard that one too.
He's an important figure in the show that hasn't shown up yet.
They've brought him up. They've said his name like four or five times.
They've said his name a couple times. He was, if you don't remember who he was, Forrest Whitaker is the actor from Rogue One. He was kind of like the guerrilla leader of the Rebellion on Jeddah, I think the planet was. The one where they capture the Imperial pilot and then he gives them to Gwol, Borgellet or something like that. Like the tentacle monster that makes them like go all crazy and all that. Definitely the weakest part of the movie, but I'm excited to see what the rise of the Rebellion, like how the rise of the Rebellion makes Forrest Whitaker's character of Saw Gerrera like go as crazy as he does. Because like the couple snippets that we've seen of him in the Andor trailer so far, like he looks to be like a well-rounded dude. Like he definitely hasn't gone off the deep end yet. And like how they talk about it in Rogue One, I'm excited to see it. Mon Mothma, I can't believe I almost forgot to talk about her. Yeah. Like it was fun to see where she comes from too, because I mean, every other Star Wars thing we see her in, like she's definitely a Rebellion general, but it's like, what else do we know about her other than like she's got like a short haircut and she gives orders to the Rebellion. This definitely is going to give her a lot more meat. Her husband's a piece of shit, so like that definitely shows how she could be trying to get out of that situation by helping the Rebellion. Mm-hmm. That whole conversation that she has with Lucan at his museum type place where he's at, where they're both putting on their act like out in the open by her driver, and then once they go in the back room, it's just like, nope, we're down to business. And
yeah, because she mentions that she's had multiple drivers, they keep switching them out, so like she can't corrupt them, almost like they're bringing them on her side. She's
definitely being watched at this point,
which is I can't wait.
It's so early in this show too, where it's just like, if she's already being watched, I can only imagine how much like tension there's going to be and suspense with her character and what she's got to go through in order to bring up the Rebellion.
Yeah.
Andor's crew, the heist crew, I'm assuming is either next episode or that's going to be like, since all of these episodes in this show are kind of like three episode arcs, the heist is either going to happen next episode or it's going to be like episode three was, where it's like we're building to this moment and then boom, like big things are going to happen. But the fun thing about the show too is that everyone's going to die at some point, except for Saw Gerrera, Mon Mothma, and Andor. Those are like the three characters so far that we know of in the show that make it out, because all of these other characters we have not seen in Rogue One and we haven't seen in the original Star Wars series. We haven't seen since. So we all know that a lot of these characters are going to die. And that includes Lucan, Stellan Skarsgård's character. What's going to be interesting is to see when it happens and how it happens, that's going to be the big tension. And the fact that, like, we're spending so much time with these characters, it's pulling the Game of Thrones move where we're getting attached to these characters, where we're learning about them, where, and at some point, like, the rug's going to be pulled out from under them and we're all going to be upset. But
I'm not ready to see B2 EMO get, you know, he's gonna go somehow, he's gonna get unplugged.
Yeah, he's probably just gonna die, his battery's gonna die.
Oh, that's gonna be heartbreaking.
But you'll just have the little bit of comfort of knowing that K2SO is gonna be coming at some point in the series.
But I want to see them together.
Oh, that actually, I didn't even think of that. That would be like a fun, like, mirror of like C-3PO and R2-D2. Like,
yeah!
Similar type droids together. So maybe he'll make it through the first season and then they'll off him like halfway through season two.
That'd be nice. Not the offing part, obviously.
They'll off him. Yeah, that would be nice. Any final thoughts on Andor before we move on?
I said it before, start watching it now.
The last thing that I want to ask you about this show before we move on to She-Hulk, have you been talking to Josh at all? Learning with the Obi-Wan talk that he's like a hardcore Star Wars fan, and knowing that when we were talking about Obi-Wan, he was very lukewarm to not at all interested in this show. So I'm very curious to know what he's thinking about these first few episodes in the show so far.
I don't think we've had like a detailed in-depth talk with, I don't think I've been able to talk with him like that. However, I'm hoping that this is from him. I'm pretty sure it is. I don't talk to too many people about this show. I believe the quote that he had about the show was, "This is better than any Marvel Disney Plus show that they've put out." I said, he thinks that this is, he's been more into this than anything Marvel has done on Disney Plus. So
that's a fair assumption.
Yeah.
We need to have him back on sometime soon just so I can be like, I told you so. That whole episode, you guys were just teaming up on me. And then I bring up Andor and you're like, you were kind of on his side, but he was very vocal about like, I don't care about that show. That show is going to be lame. And I just want to be like, see, I told you. Welcome to my show. I told you so.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to She-Hulk. Another episode I didn't think we were going to talk about this week, but there was a bit of Marvel stuff that came out that we, A, didn't talk about, and B, came out this week. So we're just going to rope all of this stuff together into one episode. Let's talk about the new episode of She-Hulk. This episode, I enjoyed more than the general internet audience, but I feel like that's been this whole show as a whole that I've been enjoying more than them. I'll own up right away and say, you were right, Kyle. It's hard to admit, but you were right. And the whole internet and the whole world was right about Josh. This stupid barbarian got my head and made me think like, oh, maybe this is just the show like making us try to think that he's the bad guy and he actually is going to be genuinely good. And everybody was like, yeah, I could have seen that coming. And I felt like the fucking idiot listening to all the Marvel stuff that I listened to and just seeing all of like the online general response to him being a piece of shit, being like, yeah, well, we knew that already. And I'm just like, well, glad everybody else was on it. And I'm glad that I was in the dark because as soon as that happened, I was like, son of a bitch.
Listen, man, first of all, yep, told you so. Second of all, I didn't want it to be true. I wanted him to be good for Jen. I wanted this to happen for Jen.
Yeah, especially how the episode starts. That montage of them on the date was like one of the highlights of the whole series so far. Yeah, like I really enjoyed that.
It was awesome. And then she woke up the next morning and he wasn't there. And I genuinely immediately was like, he stole her blood. Like immediately that was my first thought, but she was all happy. I was like, okay. And then she texted him. I was like, okay. And then he's not responding. And then throughout the episode, I'm just like, it's more just confirming my thoughts. Like, nope, he's a douche. He's a douche. He's a douche. He's not texting back. He absolutely stole her blood. And then we get the confirmation at the end of the episode. Well, I guess we don't know specifically if he stole her blood or if he was there and got intel. I mean, he told the Hulk King basically that he got it with emojis. that's not really a great way for an evil corporation to communicate. Maybe use words instead of emojis in the future. But he also took a fucking picture of her while she's sleeping. Oh, I wanted to vomit and punch him in the face at the same time. Oh, disgusting.
I think he stole her blood. You're one of your favorite podcasts that I also listen to, The New Rock Stars. They talked about how that shot when she wakes up, she's got two little dots on her shoulder.
Eric Voss did a deep dive on Tatiana Maslany.
Yeah.
So funny.
A little bit of a creepy dive, but I'm glad that he did it for us to confirm our suspicions that, yeah, that was definitely needle marks from her getting blood drawn. I forgot where I was going to go from here.
it was a fun episode because we got to see Emil Blonsky's thing went off, which I believe like his inhibitor, his chip. I think that's going to be big because obviously from trailer footage, we see Abomination again in a different shot, unless, again, trailers lie to us all the time. But we're assuming that's going to come back into play. So we get to go to the retreat where Jen doesn't have cell phone reception. Obviously, she's waiting for the text from Josh all the time. But we get to meet all these fun, random, obscure Marvel characters. I just absolutely, the Porcupine, Manbull, Saracen, that's what it was. El Aguila. I'm terrible at pronouncing names. No, but all of these characters are so much fun. Like in the trust circle, talking to Jen about Josh. We also get what was his name? Wrecker from the people who stole who tried to attack Jen and get her blood in the first time.
You get Wrecker from the Wrecking Crew.
Yes. The Wrecking Crew. Yes. Jeez. There's too many shows going on, okay? It was just so much fun to see them all interacting, just like, again, random obscure characters. We got to see some personality out of them. We got to see them kind of coaching up and becoming really good friends with Jen. Like, it was just really fun. They all had really good chemistry together, I thought.
First of all, Blonsky is fucking loaded because his retreat, like, there's so much land.
How many fucking acres is that?
Especially when we spend like a solid 2 minutes of just watching Jen try to find cell service, walking throughout that whole complex.
It's like forests.
And that's in California.
Yeah.
Like, that dude's got
Northern California. Like, yeah.
What? How many other wives does he have other than the seven? That
he just needs the seven, man. That's all he needs.
No, those wives must be loaded because he's got a lot of freaking land for that. A lot of those characters I had never heard of before.
No, me either.
So it was kind of, some of them were kind of odd and bizarre. Manbull was one that I was like, really? But like, what else are you gonna do with him?
I'm not gonna give him a Disney Plus show.
the luchador, non-luchador character was pretty funny. I only did that in college or whatever you said. Yes. The vampire was pretty fun. I would love to see him in Blade.
Apparently he's an actual vampire in the comics. But also there's another character who's not an actual vampire. So I think that was the joke in saying he thinks he's a vampire, but no one else does. I think he will turn out to be an actual vampire.
I would love to see him show up in Blade. Whether or not that happens, we'll be talking about Blade later on in this episode. The big standout for me, though, which I loved seeing him, but I was also kind of disappointed, Porcupine. Him I knew from the comics.
Oh, okay.
Because my favorite run of Spider-Woman, written by Dennis Hopeless, he is a very important character in that run.
Interesting. And
starts off as Jen's babysitter because Spider-Woman in that series ends up getting pregnant, has a child. He ends up being like the nanny after she like busts him.
Interesting.
And they have a very interesting relationship throughout that series. So I knew him from that, and I was very excited to see him. The fact that he had the mask on the whole time, I thought this was like a setup of like, this is going to be like a big big celebrity, like doing a cameo, and he's finally gonna take off his mask, and we're gonna see, like, I don't know, like
Denzel Washington.
Yes, like somebody like so ridiculous where it I feel like that would have made that moment a whole lot better. And instead it was the luckiest actor in the world, because this is, I kid you not, his first credited IMDb.
It's the only thing on his IMDb page.
Yeah. So the fact that he got to be Porcupine and She-Hulk, like, kudos to that guy. But at the same time, it's like, oh, it's some random guy, and the reason he's wearing his mask is because he's stinky.
it's like when Toby comes out, and it's just some random guy.
I was a little disappointed in that, but all that to say, I was excited to see him there regardless. Wrecker is interesting, because
so interesting.
I don't know if, like, I genuinely liked, like, what he contributed to that scene and what he contributed to the group and to Jen and her character development. But at the same time, I'm like, I still don't know if I can trust you, because you are still the leader of your little band of not so great villains. But
yeah. Exactly. Like, we brought up New Rockstars. I'll take one of their theories here. Is like, he was the one that kind of initiated Jen deleting Josh from her phone. So this is almost like deleting evidence at this point. If he knows what Josh is doing, then he's like, oh, come on, just delete him from your phone. Then you don't have to think about him anymore. And then you won't have any evidence when there's stuff coming out. And, like, he knows that she's a lawyer. He knows that, like, might as well get him out of the, get Josh completely out of the phone so that there's no evidence of them communicating, that it was ever a date or anything like that. Like, I think that's such a solid theory that I did not think about. I was like, okay, Wrecker's actually a normal dude. Maybe he was just, like, paid for hire. But I love this theory so much.
I love that theory, too, which also sparks where my brain fart came in earlier. I was going to ask you your stance on her text. Is it creepy, or is it, like, kind of cute and sincere? Because
if I get a text back in the morning, then yeah, then that's a dub at that point. I don't care what it says. What she's, no, in like, in this specific case too, what she said was not, I didn't think it was creepy, I didn't think it was weird or anything like that, but who knows. I mean, I've been single for 3 years, so.
And I've texted shit like that to girls before, that I've like in her situation where, you know, things have been working up and, like, genuinely had a great time, and maybe things are gonna go forward.
Yeah,
I know I've texted shit like that before. So the fact that, like, when he was like, dude, that's creepy, and the whole group was like, yeah, dude, that's not okay, I was like, what? Am I a creep then too? Because I thought that it was completely normal.
I wouldn't ghost a girl after that, that's for sure.
And
I mean, obviously that's not why Josh ghosted her, but
that being, like, the start of, like, them trying to be like, oh yeah, you should delete his number, like, oh, you shouldn't have gone that far, like, that being the starting point of it, I was like, that didn't sit right with me. I was like, I don't agree with what's going on here.
Yep, but Wrecker's the one that started that.
Yeah, it's very interesting theory that I would like to jump on that theory bandwagon as well. We all know now that next episode is going to be at this lawyer award, like the lawyer of the year award or whatever that they've set up. So that's probably going to be the next episode, because we've seen, like, in the trailer, her getting out of, like, the limo and her fancy dress and all that. And so that's going to be coming next, and hopefully sometime soon. Daredevil watch. I know
it feels strange that we're gonna end and who knows, they're probably, knowing us now, we're saying that it's gonna be the last episode, it's gonna be the next episode, because we're saying this, it feels weird that they would end on Daredevil. I would have to assume they have to do it this week, but it makes more sense for the story to do it the last week. I don't know,
it's interesting. I feel like lately, and by lately I mean, like, a lot so far in phase four, Marvel's been trying to, like, get ahead of the leaks a little bit by, like, at least the marketing campaign behind like all of their shows and movies have been, I feel like, trying to get that one step ahead.
Yeah.
Where I could very well see Daredevil being in the last episode and him being like the big surprise of the series, and then they gave it away like in the first trailer, kind of like how Xavier was like one of the biggest reveals in Multiverse of Madness, and then his voice is in the first trailer, and it's like, well, we all know who that's gonna fucking be.
But then they gave us John Krasinski.
They did.
So like that's why I think she very good well pull something else like that.
I don't want to jump too far ahead into our lineup here, but when we get into the Black Panther trailer and like the poster that dropped this week, I don't know if you had a chance to see that either, but like, again, I feel like these movies and these shows are trying to be like, hey, we got like a big reveal. We got something big going on here. And then like marketing's like, hey, we want to like get this out ahead before it gets leaked.
So and, I think there's two schools of thought with that, though. I think with a movie, yes, you want to keep your, like, again, Doctor Strange. They gave us Patrick Stewart, but then, like, in the trailers and before the movie to get you in the theater. But then while you're in the theater, they give you John Krasinski. So, like, it's like, we'll give you something now, and then we'll give you a surprise in the theater. For a show like this, though, you're already subscribed to Disney+. They're just trying to get you to watch the show. By showing Daredevil and then putting him in the last episode, that guarantees everyone watches first episode. Oh, well, maybe he'll be in next week. Nope, maybe he'll be in next week. Nope, maybe he'll be in next. And then that almost like, if you're there just for Daredevil, you're then accidentally going to watch the entire show.
And you're going to be pissed the whole time watching. Well,
absolutely, but they don't give a shit because they got your stream watch.
That's fair. Any final thoughts on She-Hulk?
I love this show. I cannot wait to watch. We're recording on Wednesday. Can't wait to watch tomorrow, and can't wait for the season finale next week.
Moving on, more Marvel news. So we talked about the big like bomb that didn't drop at D23 that dropped a little bit afterwards. That being Hugh Jackman coming back as Wolverine in Deadpool 3. There was a bit of other news that came out that same day that very much got buried by the Deadpool 3 Hugh Jackman announcement, that as a casual Marvel MCU fan, it might just be like, yeah, whatever. But I feel like there's a lot more weight and a lot more sticky of a situation to this news coming up that we're going to talk about. I hinted at it a little bit during the She-Hulk talk, and that being Blade. Last week, the same day that the Deadpool 3 news dropped, earlier in that day, there was another bit of Marvel news that dropped about Blade, and that the director of Blade left the project. It's significant because this is 6 weeks before that movie was supposed to start shooting, was supposed to start going into production.
Yeah, because this is supposed to come out in 13 months.
Yeah, this is supposed to come out next November, in a year. Yep. So that, again, as a casual fan, you might be like, oh, they lost a director. They can easily find another person. There's a little bit more news that hasn't been very publicly talked about. A couple of the podcasts that I listen to, some of those people have a lot better connections than we do. They actually have connections to people that are in the industry. And they've heard things like, this movie has a 90-page script with two mediocre action scenes, and that's it. There's also been talks with these inside sources that Mahershala Ali has been very frustrated with this whole process in Blade so far. None of this sounds good for this project at all. I personally don't think we're going to get Blade next November, especially since this news was announced last week. So at this point of this episode coming out, it'll be 5 weeks until production, so a little bit over a month. Even if you did bring in a brand new director, a month is not a lot of prep time before you jump into production to figure out where this movie's going, where Marvel and Kevin Feige want this movie to go, you as a director, what you want to bring to the project, and where you might want to take things. And even as far as like building sets and costumes and even just like prepping the actors. Maybe this affects the script too. If the script is as bad as it sounds too, like that's also a little bit alarming. It's also a little it's very alarming that it sounds like Mahershala Ali is very frustrated, which I don't blame him. He's a two-time Oscar award winner, and this project has been in development for 3 years. They announced this in San Diego Comic-Con 2019. So I get the pandemic and all that like interferes with that, but at the same time, it's like you had 3 years to get the script down. And if it sounds like you're already having script problems, what did you do the last 3 years? And if your star is super frustrated, how long until he's just like, you know what? Not worth it. I'm going to walk away too. Like there's a lot better things that I could be doing with my time right now, other than being a vampire in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Kyle, all of this news, what are some of your general thoughts coming out of all this?
It's unfortunately just another behind the scenes story that's getting piled on with Marvel. I mean, we've had so many stories about the special effects people just upset with Marvel, like pushing them too much and dropping the budget, even though they have these crazy CGI scenes and whatever. Like, it's just, unfortunately, it's just another pile on. If you pay attention to the back behind the scenes stuff, you know, it's worrying. Blade will probably get pushed back. I can't imagine it's too important to the timeline. It's probably very much a standalone movie. As long as it's before the next movie that he's in, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too worried unless there's something else that comes. Like if they hire another director and then Mahershala is still upset about something, then you can start to get worried that we might lose him and then we'll have to recast him and then that's going to delay the whole process again. Like, they already teased him in Eternals. There's a rumor going around that he's going to be either teased or make an appearance in. I kind of doubt it, but in Werewolf by Night, which we're getting this Friday, the day that this podcast drops, I'm super excited to watch that. Yeah, I don't know. It could throw a wrench into plans, but then again, what, Adam was teased back in 2018 at the end of Guardians. I can't remember what year that was. It's been a long time. It's not that big a deal. But like I said, it can turn into something big, unfortunately. I think there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff with Marvel that could ultimately turn into, does Marvel have a production problem, I guess is what you could call it. I don't know. It seems like more and more issues have been popping up.
Which is the interesting and the important thing to take out of this whole thing. It's just like all of the behind the scenes stuff that's starting to like come out intentionally, unintentionally, who's to say, but about like Marvel and all that stuff. It's gonna be interesting. Again, I don't think we're gonna get this movie in November of 2023. Would it be nice to get it before Secret Wars? Absolutely, because I'm sure every freaking Marvel character is going to show up in that movie, alive, dead, or otherwise.
Literally.
But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how Phase 5 and then how Phase 6 actually goes. I mean, we've seen the whole game plan for Phase 5. We know some of the big things that are going to be coming in Phase 6 now. It's going to be interesting to see how smoothly those all go and how true to course those all stay. Be it directors, be it special effects. It's going to be interesting to see if any more projects get delayed intentionally or unintentionally. If Phase 6 does end up wrapping up in 2025, or if it gets extended to like 2026, 2027. Again, that's a long time from now. It's still the end of 2022, so we've got a long time before all that happens, but it's going to be interesting to kind of keep an eye on these things to see what all happens based off of all the behind the scenes stuff, your general public's reaction to everything, and just like the landscape of it all. A little bit of news, but I felt like it was important to bring up. Last, but certainly not least in this episode, a little trailer dropped on Monday of this week, and tickets also went on sale for the next big Marvel property to come out. Not Werewolf by Night, even though, like you said, I'm also very excited for that special that's going to be out today. Can't wait to watch it. But Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, dropped in their second trailer, the quote-unquote official trailer, and tickets also went on sale.
And they dropped the poster.
And they also dropped the poster. They've dropped a couple posters.
Well,
but
yes,
the main poster they dropped. Kyle, you got to watch this before I did because you were the one who informed me that this even dropped. Things have been so freaking crazy at work lately that, like, I haven't been able to check my phone as often as I normally would. I think you sent me the text about that trailer at, like, what, 8:30 in the morning? Something like that.
Man, it makes it sound like I don't work either.
And I didn't get a chance to watch it until 11 o'clock. And then...
I text you at 8:30. You responded to that text at 10. And then you responded later about 1:09 saying that you got your tickets. So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was around 11 o'clock. I went to the bathroom and I went in the stall and I put my headphones in and I was like, I'm going to pretend to take a poop while I watch this 3-minute trailer. And not only was the trailer awesome and just builds my hype even more, but then that little tick on the end that says tickets available now. And I was like, shit, this dropped at 8:30 in the morning. I'm not even gonna be able to see this on Thursday night now. So I quick opened up the Marcus app and I'm looking for seat times and didn't get my normal seats, but going to Thursday night at 6:30 showing. I am so pumped for this. I kind of alluded to it earlier. I feel like this trailer definitely gives away who they want us to think is going to be Black Panther, which I'm a little bummed about. I liked the first trailer where it was like, who's it going to be? And we're all like speculating and we've got our guesses and all that stuff. Kyle, I'm going to bring it back to you right away. We talked about who we think, who we'd like it to be and then who we think it should be in a previous episode. Do your thoughts and opinions keep to that, or are you changing your thoughts a little bit based off of what we've seen in this trailer now?
I have changed my tune because, like you mentioned, it's very heavily implied that it's Shuri. She's at the front of the poster, right? Boom. In the new Marvel logos on a lot of the new projects, they have now thrown in Shuri and T'Challa dapping up and doing the thing, right?
Yep.
That's a very subtle, like, passing of the torch type of thing. The dots on the new Panther mask very much aligned with what she wore in the first movie towards the end of the fight and what she wears in the quote-unquote funeral that we see in the trailer as well. It's very much implied that it's Shuri.
Like the last trailer, how you said that was telling the story, and I might be stepping on your toes here, but that last trailer, we thought that it could be Nakia because that trailer started on her, ended with Black Panther, and it felt like that could be the case. This trailer kind of did that with Shuri, where it starts, boom, you get that close-up of her, like at the quote-unquote funeral scene, mm-hmm. where you see the dots on her face, and then it ends with, boom, we get our full look of how Black Panther is going to look now, and those dots are very similar on the mask, and yes. Shuri was very present in this trailer.
Very.
As opposed to the last trailer, which is also interesting, though, which I think you're going to tap into, the fact that Nakia was very prominent in the first trailer and was hardly in this trailer.
She was actually only in the first trailer, that opening shot, and then there was only one other shot of Nakia in the first trailer. Like, she's actually has been held back from these trailers, which, again, plays into why I think it... So,
I just want to wrap up my thought by saying, mm-hmm. I think the poster's the dead giveaway. I feel like trailers can be very misleading. Trailers can definitely sway opinions one way or another. that poster though of like the whole cast is there, like towards the middle, but they're definitely smaller, and then boom, dead center, very big on the poster is Shuri right in front of the Black Panther mask. It's like, this is definitely telling us that this is going to be Black Panther. Now we're definitely probably going to align on some thoughts here, but I'm going to turn the conversation over to you now and not step on your toes anymore.
Right. The Black Panther that we saw in this trailer and we see on this poster is Shuri. I'm like 99% sure of that, all of the things that I mentioned before. However, I don't think we're only going to get one Black Panther in this movie. I think we are going to get multiple, not completely taking over for just to make up for T'Challa being gone, right? I think ultimately at the end of the movie, there's going to be one Black Panther that takes over. However, in this movie, I believe we're going to get multiple. Like you mentioned earlier with the marketing team potentially giving things away, I believe in the shot where the Black Panther lands, I believe there is another suit in the background. It looks to be like a black leg with another gold, with more gold trimming along the lines of what she has.
I did not catch that.
It's some deep dive stuff that I rarely do, but this movie has me so pumped up. There's also, so the scene when Namor is flying down, which, by the way, him flying with his feet wings, super cool. I didn't think they were going to make it look cool, but it does. The way he bounces like he's on platforms in that one shot, oh, I cannot wait. So that scene where he's flying down, it cuts immediately, and it's almost like, you know, it's almost like it's a cut to another shot like trailers do, but it's almost like it's the same scene because in the reflection of the window that Angela Bassett's looking at, Ramonda, you can see him landing in front of her outside that window, and he cocks back his spear. He is about to throw that spear into the window at Ramonda. I think, again, she's wearing a very ceremonial necklace, a lot like the nanotech suit that Shuri gave to T'Challa in the first one, where the nanotech just spreads out, and I think we could see Ramona in her own suit as well. I think we're going to get three Black Panthers at like fighting this war. Like, okay. So again, looking at the poster and dissecting it, you get Shuri in the middle. Again, I think she'll probably end the movie with it, or she'll be the main one, whatever. And then, so the reflection is the Talokan people, right? You have Namor, boom. Like he's kind of reflecting on Shuri, but then the top with the Wakandans, you have five people, whereas the Talokans only have three. I really think it's Namor reflecting with the three women who are going to be in Black Panther suits. And then it's the two side people. Man, I wish I could remember everyone's name, but I think it's the two side people fighting against each other. And then the two little armies fighting against each other too. I think there's so many similarities that you can make between this. It just really feels like, again, throughout the whole movie, we're going to see multiple Black Panthers it's not like it's a contest to see who's going to take it or whatever. I think it's just going to be, this is such a big threat to Wakanda that we need all hands on deck. And at the end of the day, I think it's going to be Shuri. She's going to make the final blow. She's going to save the day at the end of it. And she will ultimately take up the Black Panther mantle. What do you think of that, Brian?
I would agree with a lot of that. I think you're right. I think there's gonna be multiple Black Panthers in this movie. I did not consider the Queen. That was one that I was like, that's interesting. Like, but at the same time, like, I could see it. If you would have asked me before any of these trailers came out who I was gonna be the most excited to see in this movie, the Queen is not anywhere near the top of my list. But after these two trailers, like, I'm the most excited to see her and how she interacts with Namor. Like, we got that awesome line in the first trailer, and then we get another powerful line in this one talking about how our protector is gone and you all think that you can come into our kingdom now. And it's just like, oh shit, like,
we get a glimpse of a scene with Namor and Ramonda face to face. Like, I can't wait for that.
So, yes, I would agree. I think there's going to be multiple. I think we're going to, we almost have to get like some background knowledge of what went on during the snap. Who was Black Panther during the snap? Because both T'Challa and Shuri were both snapped away. So,
God, yeah, that's right.
And since it was a 5-year gap that they were gone, like, Wakanda couldn't have gone 5 years without a Black Panther. So clearly somebody...
Again, I think that plays into Ramonda. I think Ramonda just had this, like a lot of this has been, things are just thrusted upon her. Again, something, I still think something happens to Shuri where she ends up in the ancestral plane or something and she's gone. And that's why Ramonda is just like the last remaining almost, where she has to take it up. I mean, Nakia can help at that point too, but like her whole family's gone, that type of thing. This whole, there's just so much forced onto her that she has to be the Black Panther. She has to be the acting ruler of Wakanda. There's so much cool storytelling that can be done with her.
Someone we haven't talked about yet that I feel like could also potentially be one of these Black Panthers that we just haven't seen at all in the trailers yet, M'Baku.
Oh, okay.
When he's in this trailer... The thing that I noticed about his presence in this trailer was not only the story about Namor that he's talking about, I felt like his outfit looked very much like it could have been a Black Panther suit.
Interesting.
Like it was a dark black outfit. He definitely had like a necklace type thing that I was like, this could be a suit.
The only thing I would say to that is that we've seen a couple fight scenes with him in it where he is just in his normal garb.
Yes, we have, which I don't think he's going to be like a Black Panther the entire time. But as we talked about, I think we're going to get multiple Black Panthers in this movie. I feel like he could definitely be one. It's going to be interesting to see how they change the rules and the lore to figure out who's going to be the next Black Panther. And if there are multiple throughout the movie at like different times, or if there's multiple like at the same time, because if you remember from the first movie, like they definitely had to, there was almost like a trial to figure out who the
next. What if we get Nakia versus Shuri to end the movie after everything's done? We have a trial by combat to see who the next Black Panther is, and it's Shuri versus Nakia. Oh, I genuinely don't know who would win.
It would like, be that would be end.
See, kind of stuff right there.
And maybe that's how there's some, let me throw this theory out there to you. There's some people that feel like Shuri isn't gonna make it out alive in this movie.
That would be such a good way to do it. I mean, it would suck, but oh wow, I cannot wait for this movie. Oh my god,
I'm just, but anyway, so to wrap back to the M'Baku thing, it would almost make sense that he would be in the conversation for Black Panther, because he almost was in the first movie. He almost took out T'Challa to be the new Black Panther.
I have to say
he didn't get dusted. He did not get dusted in that 5-year period either.
He could have been, maybe he was filling in. I have to say, I still believe that there's a chance that we get Killmonger. I know it. I understand. I think there's a strong possibility that we see Killmonger.
And I'm going to stick to my guns and say, leave it to rest. Like we had him for one movie, enjoy that. But I don't need that character back.
We will at least see him in the ancestral plane. I will guarantee that. I will put my reputation on that.
I could see that. I could see that's who shows up instead of T'Challa, to explain why he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I could definitely see him coming back, because especially since Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick Boseman were so tight, and mm-hmm. he was such a big part of the crew in that last movie, like I could definitely see him coming back for that type of a role. As far as like bringing him back to life to be like a part of a defender of Wakanda, like no, I that's not who that character was in that whole first movie. So
do you think with all this time travel and multiverse stuff that Marvel's doing right now, do you think that there's any slight possibility that Marvel would quote unquote recast T'Challa to play as a Michael B. Jordan from an alternate universe. I think there's just so much hunger behind the character, or behind the, maybe the actor, just to come back.
I could see him coming back in Secret Wars as Killmonger and a different version of Killmonger.
The what if version?
Yes. I could see them taking the spin route on him being like the good Killmonger instead of the evil one that we've seen two different versions of now. I don't think I could see him being recast as T'Challa though. Nice. Because he's been that other character already. A lot of times you got to think of like the general public and your general audience when it comes to this stuff, and I could see that being a potential confusion. However, I do think that they could and probably will recast T'Challa in the future and say that he's a different multiversal, because I feel like they made this decision very early on after Chadwick Boseman died to like not recast the role.
Yep.
And they had a plan going forward. But I also feel like they've heard the outcry from a lot of people now that are very upset that T'Challa's done and gone.
That's interesting. I actually haven't heard any of that, because I'm in the boat where like, yeah, let this lay and rest, move on with the story. Like, and I think again, from the trailers, I have full trust in Ryan Coogler to do the right thing, because this has just been, I think it's going to be phenomenal. I don't know. I think they made the right choice. I think it would almost to a level be disrespectful, almost not disrespectful, I guess, but it would almost be in bad taste to kind of just move on. I think this is a very cool thing to do for Chadwick and for the character. I'm surprised by that. I haven't seen that reaction much.
I've heard it a lot. And fair. I agree with you. I think they made the right choice. Yeah. But I could also see them go back on that choice in a slight alteration. I'm not saying like they'll recast T'Challa and he'll be like the main Black Panther again now and forever.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, but I could see them bringing back the character to be like, all right, like he's back. It's a different iteration. It's a different actor, but the character's back and these are the different things we're going to do with this character, but we brought him back. Even if it is just for Secret Wars, like they could bring in a different T'Challa just to have T'Challa there and be like, all right, he's got to go back to his universe now that Secret Wars is done.
A risky move that they could do is just have him in the suit.
Yeah.
Again, risky though. I'm not sure how people would respond to that. I would almost, that would feel weird, you know, because we know it's not chat. I don't know. I think the best way to do it is to just move on.
I think that would be the most tasteful way to do it, is like a small shot of like the regular T'Challa version of Black Panther, and then have somebody be like, is that really? And then like he turns away and like goes back to battle or whatever, and that's it, you know.
To wrap this talk up though, I'm assuming the last thing I want to talk about is Riri Williams. They gave us so much more in this trailer for her, and I feel like we get a shot of Mach 1 of her suit, and I think that's the car chase in Chicago, because she's flying over at one point. And then I think we get to see her building like Mach 2 with the fucking like leg boosters, a lot like Tony in Infinity War, you know. Like and plus we get the HUD shot. Let's go! I'm pumped for Ironheart now.
That's what I was gonna ask you, is if you think that suit is gonna be like the main suit, because the action figures already come out, so like I already know what the full suit looks like. And
I think that's the second suit though. Like I said, I think they find her in Chicago where she's from, and it, like a, I don't know if it's a rescue mission or she just joins them in a mission and that's why she gets taken to Wakanda or something. But yeah, and then I think we get to see her building that second suit, which we then see her use again.
Here, I'll see if I can find it.
Sure.
So that we're both on the same page. But yeah, there's an action figure that came out of like the official suit almost hope that it's not like the full real suit.
Okay.
Like if it's her suit in this movie, and then like she does like the Iron Man thing and builds up and makes a better one.
Yeah.
I would be all for that, because the action figure is interesting. It's
okay.
It's not my favorite look. Here, I found it. I'll send it to you. But I would be okay with it being like this is like the first version of this suit. Like this is this movie's version, and then once we get to her show, we get more closer to how it looked in the comics.
Interesting. That's not even what it looks like in the trailer.
Yeah, so it's
like a bigger, like almost like a rounder head, like a Hulkbuster kind of head. I feel it feels like interesting.
Yeah, again, not my favorite. But if it's like a Mark One suit, yeah, for this movie, and then like we get the actual one for her show.
I'm a little scared of the, again, us as hardcore comic book, you know, hardcore fans, we know Riri Williams. God, I have trouble saying that. We know her story, right? We know that she is, it's not like she is just an Iron Man ripoff just for the sake of throwing Iron Man back in the MCU. Unfortunately, though, I think there's going to be some blowback. I think there's going to be, why do we have to bring an Iron Man back? What? This is not me saying this. I want to formally say this is not me. This is what I think people will say.
No,
based on reactions from She-Hulk, why is she a black girl? Like I genuinely think that's going to be a reaction. Why do we need to bring back Iron Man? Oh, I think that unfortunately, where there's going to be some blowback. Hopefully not, and hopefully not as much. But like, no, man, I see that blown up.
I 100% think that that's going to happen, because this movie's already been getting that. As far as like, oh, they're making Black Panther a girl, like so lame, like those douchey, stupid, get with the times people.
Why do men suck? Why do we suck, Brian? I don't get it.
it's a question that many a woman has asked me, and it's a question that I've never had an answer for.
No, me either.
All I can say is I try to be better than that, and I understand that I'm flawed, but I hope that I can at least be a somewhat decent representation of my sex. So, yeah, that's all I got on Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. I'm beyond stoked for this movie. It's definitely like my most anticipated movie for the rest of the year. I think it's definitely going to be my favorite of phase 4 as far as Marvel goes in general. November 10th can't come soon enough.
Honestly, like I need this. This is one of my most anticipated movies, at least since No Way Home. And before that, I mean, probably Endgame, honestly. Like everything else has been exciting, and I couldn't wait to go see all these. But like this one is like genuinely, give this to me right now. Like I really hope
that with Wakanda Forever we get the first Quantumania trailer, because that movie comes out in February.
I don't like that they put the trailer at the end of No Way Home, especially because they released it to the public like a week or two later.
I'm not saying like as a post-credit scene or a mid-credit scene, like even if it came out the Tuesday before,
sure,
and then we got to see it like before the movie starts during the trailers, like on the big screen.
Did you see that the trailer was leaked?
I did see that. I have not watched it.
Curiosity definitely got the better of me that day.
I'm one of those people where even if something leaks, I want to watch it in the highest quality. So I'll avoid it. The only thing that I've seen is a blurry image of a close-up of a very bloodied up Scott Lang. And that's all that I've seen from that trailer so far.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately, I saw the majority of it.
I'm beyond psyched for that movie, too. I think that movie's going to be a lot bigger and a huge surprise. And it's going to be more than people are right now expecting.
Gonna be insane.
Yes. I think it could be I think it could be like on an Infinity War type level for a movie.
Potentially. Honestly. Yeah. Honestly, potentially.
Yeah. So
we could see the cracks start to form for Secret Wars and Kang Dynasty. Like I think this would be the movie to start that.
Kang Dynasty, that is, I have not read it, but that is a story, an Avengers story arc that I feel like we should cover at some point on this podcast, because the things that I've heard about that story are pretty intense and just makes me all the more hyped for that movie. So I feel like we should definitely cover that at some point. But before we can wrap this episode up, we got to add in our one of our favorite segments on the show, a segment that we usually end the show on, the best off recommendations of the week. Kyle, do you have a best off recommendation for us this week?
Of course I do. I teased it last week, Brian. I finally finished season one. I am 5 episodes into season 2, and I am absolutely loving The Boys on Amazon Prime. Oh my God. It's so awesome. Every episode just adds more gore, more intrigue, more what the fuck was that? Just this show is incredible. The characters are so well thought. The world building is just incredible. And the way that, especially, obviously, I never read the comics or anything, but apparently, like, from people that I hear talk about it, because, of course, I'm going to go back and watch videos from 2020 and 2021 to hear people talk about their first reactions to these videos or to these shows when they came out. The dedication to the comics while also subverting the comic reader with how they're writing the show apparently has just been phenomenal. I absolutely love this show. Like I said, I'm just about to finish season 2, and then I'm excited to jump into season 3 because I remember when season 3 was coming out and how many people were just freaking out about everything. I've seen clips. I've seen Jensen Ackles in there. Like, I have no idea what he does. I'm very excited to see. He basically looks like Captain America from the pictures I've seen. Plus, he's singing a song. I cannot wait. I absolutely cannot wait to finish and get caught up on this. This show has just... somehow surpassed the expectations that I had with everyone telling me how good this show was.
Welcome to the party, pal. It's about damn time that you were catching up on the show, because like you said, it is a phenomenal show. This is one of the rare comic book shows that I haven't read the books to. And it's one of the very rare comic book shows that I do not have an interest to read the comics, because I like being surprised. I like in this show, I like not knowing what's going to happen. And the things that I've heard about the books and the show is that the majority of the people who have read the books feel like the show is better than the books. Like, takes the material and elevates it and makes it so much better and fits our time a lot better. And for all those reasons, I'm like, I don't need to read the books.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for season 4 to come out next year. They're currently filming that right now. It's definitely one of my favorite shows that's on right now. So
just the different twists that they can pull. It's just incredible to think about I can't even put it to words. Just the amount of things that they can say, you're thinking this, just kidding, it's this. Like, there's just so many.
And so they can take the most despicable characters in the world and still, like, at times and moments make you feel a little emphatic for them. And then, like, immediately erase that, like, the next minute.
Homelander is one of the worst human beings ever, but there's a reason that he's that bad, which is crazy that you can somehow give that character sympathy. I don't know much about Stormfront. I'm learning. I know, again, I don't want to spoil too much for anyone who else who potentially hasn't seen it. I do know more about Stormfront, but I don't know much about her and why she's terrible yet. Who's the Deep?
I can't wait for you.
The Deep is terrible. The Deep is a shit human being, but like, there's a reason. Obviously, there's no reason for what he did. But there's like a reason that he thinks the way he thinks. It's just again, the world building, the character building. It's the it. This is when someone first told me about this show. They said, if you drop the Justice League into real life, right? And it's that is not like that is the most true statement you can say about this show, because it really is superheroes owned by a corporation. They have to go through media training. They have like it's just they have to go through sponsors. All their stuff is scripted. It's just incredible. Because it really is just like if we had superheroes in this real world that we're living in right now, this is exactly what it would be like.
My pitch for this show is always if Amazon owned the Justice League and they were all a bunch of dicks and you had normal people that were like, fuck these guys, it's time to take them out. Like, that's basically this show.
Yeah. Absolutely.
My best staff recommendation for this week, I touched on it, I think, a little bit last week, if I remember correctly. I'm giving it a little bit away to Kyle here, who can see on the camera the hat that I'm wearing. A little game came in the mail last week. I'm not a big gamer, but I was so excited for this game when it was first announced. I was very jealous of the people who bought it digitally when it was released digitally months ago. But physically, it finally came out. And that would be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. If you are at all any morsel of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, I highly, 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 highly recommend this game. It is absolutely phenomenal. You could be a very casual Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan and have a blast with this game. If you loved the classic games like the arcade games or Turtles in Time, this is very much a love letter to those games. If you loved the original, like, 1987 cartoon series, this is a very, very passionate love letter to that series. They brought the original voice actors, the ones that are still alive, back to voice for this video game. There are so many Easter eggs and characters and references to that original show that are made within this game. The music is absolutely phenomenal. There are some bangers in this game of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles songs, which adds to the collection of already great Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles songs. I absolutely love this game. I am obsessed with it. I play it as much as I can. Any free time that I have is mostly devoted to this game. I gave an hour to Andor, and I gave a half an hour to She-Hulk last week, and otherwise it's just been, all my free time has been on this game. I need to find some time for next week's episode to catch up on that show, which we'll tease in just a little bit. So I'll have to put this game off to the side for a little bit so I can quick binge through that show so we can talk about it. And I also need to give some time to Werewolf by Night today when this episode drops on Friday. Because I'm beyond stoked for that show as well, for that special. But this game has been taking up the majority of my free time. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder's Revenge. It's available digitally, and you can get it on basically any system. I got it for the Switch, which it's phenomenal to play on there. So highly, 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 highly recommend checking out this game. Even if you got to wait until Black Friday for like a sale on it, definitely check it out because you will not regret it. It's a hell of a lot of fun. Next week, we are going to be keeping into the nerdy realm, but we're going to be sidestepping, taking a little bit of a detour into an untapped realm so far on the show. There's been a couple of recommendations from Kyle over here about this genre. We had a reach out from one of the faithful six that listened to this podcast. We added that to the best off recommendations last week for the cyberpunk anime that is currently on Netflix. It's a 10 episode series that's out so far based off of the video game. One of our faithful six reached out and said that we should check that out. So what we're going to do is we're going to check that out. And next week, we are going to talk about that show with said faithful six listener, Kyle, spelt with a C, Patterson. he's going to be joining us on the show. We're going to talk about Cyberpunk. And then I'm going to take a back seat and let these two just geek out and spew out about all things anime, their favorites, some anime that they've watched that they could recommend to new people to the world. I'm definitely going to be taking on the stance of that person of being like, I'm not big into anime. Where should I start? What are some good ones to watch? What ones do you guys like? That's as much steering of that portion of the episode as I'm going to be doing. So we're going to be deep diving into the world of anime and focusing on the Cyberpunk anime on Netflix. If you want to watch that show and catch up before we spoil the crap out of it next week, I highly recommend that you do that in your downtime along with us for this week. For this week, we have Ben. You're Midwestern Nerds. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwestern Nerds. We are the Midwestern Nerds podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to MidwesternNerds@gmail.com. You can find and stream and listen to our show wherever you find and stream and listen to podcasts. Please remember to rate and review, share and subscribe. Be kind. Please do rewind. All of these things help this show continue to grow and improve and be the Midwestern Nerds podcast that you, the listener, want to listen to. For your Midwestern Nerds this week, I've been Brian Stoffel.
Keep it nerdy.